We are back, Lions Collective, just in time, a week away. We're getting to training camp here, off season. I know you guys I've been talking to you guys all week, and I know vacation mode is still on, but we're creeping back into training camp, and we're excited to be here. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi, Woodward Sports Crunch. I'm Sports Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, which, by the way, shout out to you, Justin. Today marks 2 years of Detroit Football Network, so it's a great day. So we got perfect time. We're doing Lions Collective. It's a massive day for you and what you got going on at Detroit Football Network.
Man, 2 years ago, I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, like heart racing, mind racing, knowing what the day was bringing. I don't know, was pooping the pants a little bit, let's be honest. But things have gone really well. Feel really good heading into this third year about where things are at. And yeah, I wouldn't be with you fellas if I didn't bounce and do this thing on my own. So here we are.
Honestly, Justin, like, it says a lot about your work ethic and just how much time and work you put into the job to be able to build this from the ground up like you have. So congrats on 2 years, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Congrats, brother. We're thankful for you. I know that. Absolutely. We're absolutely thankful for you. And last but not least, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic. He's on vacation too. He joins us on the road. So hopefully the Wi-Fi, everything. We had a couple issues beforehand, but we're ironing it out. And we're getting back into the groove here of weekly episodes. Will Birchfield, he will be back next week. I believe he's still on vacation, so he'll join us next week for our episode right in the thick of kind of training camp there. But we got a lot to get to today. We'll talk about the corner situation. It's kind of there's a lot to talk about, which is good because, you know, we haven't done shows as much the last about month and a half. So we're going to talk about the cornerback room, Laporta, him being officially cleared to come back for training camp, injuries. And then, of course, we'll talk training camp storylines. So, I mean, we can get into the cornerback room to kind of start here because I know the TA situation happened. The Lions are kind of moving on without him. They made their decision to cut him. And now in the quarterback room, it's a big talking point here. Rocky Ya-Sin seems to be the guy. Last year saw flashes of him to step up, be that number two corner. But DJ Reed and Rocky Ya-Sin, and then Anna Strykstra, of course, kind of working back. We'll see what happens with him. But how do you guys feel just looking at this now new look cornerback room heading into the season and maybe your concern level there?
Yeah, I take off for 1 week, and I think the first day I'm on the road – driving from one airport to the hotel, and the Arnold news dropped. So didn't really ever get fully refreshed on this vacation, but I find it interesting, and we can, I guess, maybe get into the decision to let Arnold go if you want. But every step of the way, kind of through the offseason, every time we had access to people, we asked them about, you know, Arnold and his situation. And I don't know if they were, you know, playing coy, playing hands of the vest, but it felt like their head was in the sand the whole time, you know. And in terms of, like, Dan said, we believe this kid, it doesn't look like it's going to amount to anything. I asked Brad about it when we had him on, and he talked about being a pessimistic planner, but did he really plan pessimistically? I felt kind of like an optimistic approach. They'd already brought in or brought back Rocky Sin at that point. What else did they add? You know, a couple nickels to the mix. And so it really felt like the Lions did believe they would have Terrion Arnold, that this would blow over, that he wasn't involved. And maybe he wasn't, you know, like, look, this is still going to go through the court case, but they have made the decision to move on. And now, you know, we left this podcast last time with me talking about cornerback being kind of the weak spot. Well, it's a lot weaker now. And look, I love the way Rocky Sin fit in this team last year. I thought the decision to bring him back at the cost to bring him back was phenomenal. He just fits the team stylistically. I think you look at the passer rating allowed last year was a career best 72%. Saw today that he forced a tight window throw on more than 40% of throws, which was top 10 in the league. And we're talking in the same breath as a Sauce Gardner, a Quinyon Mitchell, a Pat Surtain. Listen, they're covering different caliber receivers in most cases, but I think it's still a really encouraging stat that, like, Rock's glued on these guys. And so you feel really good about that. Beyond him, that's where it gets real concerning. You got Ennis Rakestraw, 46 snaps in 2 years. You've got Khalil Dorsey, you know, a really, really great special team player, maybe not a really great cornerback. And I know Nick Whiteside is kind of a fan favorite, but you've just got this really exciting but very, very small sample size to go on, and he kind of really struggled in his last preseason audition that prevented him from getting a practice squad spot in the first place. And so, you know, it's like they're really banking on the starters to stay healthy. And it makes me wonder if maybe there's a move in play here to maybe bring on somebody else, whether it's a veteran or a guy that gets cut at the end of training camp, just something to maybe more firmly establish the depth here.
Yeah, if there's ever a time for Brad to be proven right about Ennis Rakestraw, it's definitely this year. I mean, it feels like the last month I've been doing more Ennis Rakestraw research than I ever have, because it felt like, oh, he's a part of the roster, but I'm not as concerned about it. Now I'm like, okay, every single Ennis Rakestraw update we're going to have in training camp, I'm going to be glued in on it, because – you know, you think he's a massive guy. He's only about 5'11", but you saw at least at Mizzou, which I know Colton will be back. He's handling some internet issues, so he'll be back, Mizzou guy. He was obviously a projected first-rounder, went in the second round because of injury concerns, and I know it hasn't been, you know, his fault, of course, because of that, but you're hoping they can get something out of him, because I agree with you. Even like nickel, you feel really good about it. It's just the outside corner position, a position that you felt like with Rock as depth, now it feels like a massive concern. And you know, it's upset. I'm upset about it because, you know, I was excited for Terron Arnold and it felt like he could really jump to be your number one corner this year. But DJ Reed's going to be your number one. And, you know, it's unfortunate because if you're going up against these top offenses and top quarterbacks and you have basically Rocky Sin and DJ Reed, you just feel like that pass rush has to get home. And I know I talked to Jason Kubina the other day, he joined the show, and he had made a great point. Like, if there was ever a time for the pass rush and the secondary to kind of mirror each other and have a marriage, it's this year, because they got to get home more than ever, because they don't have the guys that, you know, you feel great about, at least depth wise. So I'm hoping Ennis can show something in training camp. I think everyone's rooting for him for sure.
I think you got Colton in the lobby waiting for you to add him back in.
There you go.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to just, not much. We started dabbling into the Ennis Rakestraw stuff, and I'll leave as much of that to Mizzou guys to bond as much as possible. But I am curious, like, if they have to pivot with McCreary or Keith Abney. You know, those are two guys that have played outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that McCreary's success at the NFL level is mostly come at nickel. I know that's kind of the vision for Abney, but Abney was a really good outside corner. He's also undersized, but you know, good athlete, good anticipation, really, really good tackler in space. And so, you know, I'm curious to see how this Arnold release maybe causes a cascading trickle down effect in how they adjust or adapt their defensive backfield with the personnel that they have.
It's really interesting, the room right now. Obviously, you know, with the release of Terron, you know, you got to search elsewhere for answers. And I think right now I would say DJ Reed and Rocky Sin are probably going to be the starters based on what we saw when Terron was kind of injured in OTAs and wasn't really out there. The alignments that they were putting out there, we see, you know, Ennis kind of rotate in a little bit here and there, but it was mostly Rock and DJ. But now you got to kind of have that full scale competition. And, you know, there are probably two ways to look at it. On the one hand, you have the optimistic side. You have DJ Reed, the $16 million a year cornerback, has been a really consistent player over his career. He had the hamstring injury that really messed him up last year. If you're a glass half full guy, you'll take his word that, you know, the burst is back and you'll be pretty happy with what you see this year. And you say, okay, fine. We got our top cornerback. He can actually play like a CB1 this year, like further removed from that injury. He's going to be good. And you got Rocky Sin. And we all saw how he filled in last year in place of DJ and in place of Terron when those guys went down. You have the steady veteran that they re-sign on a very, you know, team-friendly contract to bring him back in the mix. And you have a second-round pick in Ennis Rakestraw. And, like, man, if he can figure it out and stay healthy, like, he had all the talent in the world. I thought he was a potential first-round pick early on in the draft process in 2024, ends up sliding in second. I thought that was a steal for the Lions at the time. But he's still a very capable player and a prospect that this team was high on for a reason. So if you're glass half full, that's how you look at it. If not, you got DJ Reed coming off that injury. Is he still going to be the same player? He's getting older. Is that burst actually back? We'll have to see. Rocky Sin is 30. He's getting up there at corner. He was good as a spot starter. Can he hold up over the course of a full season? And you have Ennis Rakestraw, which that whole discussion right there is really the story of his career. Can he hold up? And if not, he gets another injury in training camp. You start maybe rolling your eyes a little bit and saying, all right, well, is this guy going to be available? So it's really interesting. I think you can look at it either way, depending on like what mood you're in that day. But they do have some other options. I think Roger McCreary could play on the outside. They probably like him more at nickel. Abney, I think you're right, Justin. Like, I really liked what I saw from him playing outside corner at Arizona State. They probably like him more at nickel. But if it comes to it and they just got to throw guys out there and say, hey, someone go out there and compete, I wouldn't be shocked if Abney gets some reps on the outside just because he's done it before. So Amik, I think they liked him more inside, but he could also be a spot starter on the outside. So maybe he is that hybrid nickel outside corner guy for you this year. But they've got options. How strong they are to be determined.
I think they can backfill the nickel depth easier too, yep. Right? Whether that's Izian or even Harper. I mean, that was where Thomas Harper was working last year before injuries kind of forced him to move outside. And so, or not outside, but to safety. So, you know, I think that just adds to the case that maybe Abney is more of an outside guy until you solve it with the depth elsewhere.
Yeah, can I add this too? Like, I and I'm part of the crowd where, and you guys know me, you know, we've been doing this a while, where I'm like, problem, let's go spend money and fix it. That's how most fans think. Let's go make a trade. Let's go make a signing. That's the easy way to discuss it. But the problem is finding a good cornerback is like trying to find a good tackle. It's like trying to find these premium positions that when you have a good corner, you don't trade them. Unless you can't pay them, of course, which is a whole nother conversation. So for the crowd out there that is like, hey, just go sign another good corner or go trade for another good corner. The point I always bring up is you tell me a team that's just selling a good corner. Like they just it's the same thing with offensive line depth in the league. Like no team has offensive line depth because everyone has all the good offensive line. They want to keep all the good offensive linemen. So it's obviously a problem for the Lions. I would be lying if I said it wasn't, that their secondary is the way it looks right now with the question marks of Brian and Kirby. But I just want fans to keep that in mind that, you know, as much as we can just say, go sign a corner, like go do me a favor, go look at the free agent corners and tell me if any of those guys interest you. Okay. And then we can get back to me. That's a homework assignment. And a comment in the chat, you tell me what you think of that list. Cause it ain't pretty. So it's unfortunate it's like that, but that's where we are. I mean, you can't predict. You can semi-predict maybe with the TA situation, but to ultimately have it the way it happened, it's unfortunate. This is how it works.
Well, there's some huge names on that list, but like names that are flawed, that are past their prime, that have had embattled issues with their teams. You're talking about Trayvon Diggs, Marshawn Lattimore, Tre'Davious White. Like those are former stars in this league, you know, yes. Guys that racked up the interceptions, but like there's a reason they're not on a roster right now, right? Like there's very clear reasons these guys are not on rosters. And look, if you got to bring one in to kick the tires, like several years ago, I'll never forget Rasheen Mathis kind of changing my perception of the ability to go find a guy on the street that's got a track record and, you know, a little bit more of a polished technician than all flash. And he really bailed out the Lions at that time when they needed a guy. So, you know, maybe there is a quote unquote Rasheen Mathis floating around out there that I'm not seeing, but you know, you talk about trading for a cornerback and I have no idea who's available. This isn't the time of year where teams are selling, right? Everybody's kind of optimistic, but you look at that Sauce Gardner trade last year, two first rounders and AD Mitchell. And I understand Mitchell wasn't lighting up with the Colts, but that was their second round pick the year before. So two first rounders and a second rounder effectively to go out and get a top corner. Like, we already know that's not the Lions' way of doing business. I think if they found somebody out there, you know, they'll throw a third rounder at a guy like that's a Brad Holmes special. Yeah. But I am curious before we flip topics, Colton, just kind of what I opened up with on the cornerback discussion. Just I feel like we talked about it a lot coming out of these press sessions as we pushed on the topic. Like, does it feel like the team was naive here or were they cautiously optimistic? Like, with the Arnold situation, it just felt like they didn't take it as seriously as they needed to.
Yeah, I think there was definitely some of that. I mean, this has been a story since February. I think a lot of people actually didn't really realize the severity of it until he was released, at least in the NFL world, not saying the Lions, but like the NFL world. I was surprised to see so many tweets about being like, oh, has this been brewing like this the whole time? I'm like, yeah, where you guys been? But the Lions certainly were privy to this information all offseason. And so the fact that they didn't make a move maybe could suggest that they felt like this would get resolved and, you know, he'd be a member of the team in 2026. But or maybe it's as simple as if it happens, it happens. We like our guys. But it really did seem like, you know, even dating back to Dan's comments at owners meetings, that like they were believing what he said. And if that's the case, then that's the approach you want to go with, fine. But, you know, I think you had to kind of handle that with a little bit more sensitivity based on, you know, the alleged crimes that are potentially being committed here, and just his impact in all of this. And so the fact that it led to this, he's no longer on the team. You released him. No one said a word about him since. It's kind of like, all right, well, can't just pretend it didn't happen. This was going on all offseason. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to make another move. They might just, as I said earlier, like the guys that they have in place. And I would understand it because looking at some of those names, I don't think there's a ton of needle movers there. I did get a question about Devin Witherspoon trade, and I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen, guys. It sounds like he wants $32 million a year, and he probably part ways with multiple first-round picks. So, yeah, it seems like they're kind of just going to deal with it on the fly at this point. That's probably the best move, but it did seem like, you know, maybe they're being a little bit too, like, I don't want to say cautious with their words, but there was a sense that maybe he was going to be around when he obviously isn't anymore.
And I'll be looking forward to putting the story to bed as much as possible. Like, I'm curious what Campbell will say when we talk to him, because it's going to be one of the first topics that's addressed. And what was the turning point, right? Like, they held on to him through the weekend while he was jailed when he was initially arrested. And then, you know, as soon as the, you know, processes to a court case, like they're pulling the trigger. And like, I just wondered, like, did more information come to light there where they felt like they were lied to by the player, which gave them this cautious optimism? Was it, you know, just the black eye of this thing being going to trial? Like, what was the line that the Lions drew? Because that seems really vague to me at this point.
Absolutely. It's worth an answer for sure.
Yeah. When we talked to Brad Holmes, he said he operates pessimistically. So, you know, that's why I think I side with the, what you said there, Colton, about, I think he just feels good about what they have partially. That's where I'm like leaning towards, like where we knew it was a possibility, but they also feel really good about Rocky Sin and the rest. But we'll see how that kind of goes there. I do want to talk about another player people should be confident in, and that's Sam Laporta, because he is cleared to be back, and he is a big part of this offense. Last year when he was out, the offense took a dip, among many other reasons, by the way. Sam Laporta leaving, the offensive line being bad. I mean, we could go down a whole entire list, but Sam being out, he was definitely missed. And it didn't help that no one else in that tight end room was basically there to play football. So that also ties into that. But Sam is back. And, you know, we know he's a massive part of this offense. He has an extension that's kind of looming. And people are wondering with Jameer, Sam, and Brian, and, you know, what happens in the future of those guys. But just to kind of focus on the football, how important is it to get a guy like Sam back? I know it was a back injury, pretty serious injury, but he looks to be fully cleared here.
Before I let you go on this, Colton, I just want to point out that Jeff just set us up for We're Good 2.0.
Certain sounds like that.
And then we could blame it on Will, because that's what we do.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's so what I
he's
do.
Not here to defend himself. Yeah. All right. That's my sidebar. Go ahead, Cole. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, getting Laporta back and having him be full go, as reports say, like that's obviously huge for this offense. You know, we saw the shift in tendency when he got hurt, and obviously Rock getting hurt and other guys that didn't help late in the year there. But they really shifted more towards 11 personnel because that's where their strengths were, at the receiver room. And we saw more Tesla as a big body guy getting in there, and you know, less of the 12 personnel rates. I think they kind of plummeted after he got hurt in week 10. So Laporta is really, like, you're talking about St. Brown being, you know, one of Jared Goff's top targets. Obviously, we know that connection, but Laporta does so much of the dirty work. He's a good blocker. He handles stuff like over the middle, you know, yards after the catch. He's massive catch radius. He can go up and get it. Like, he can lean out for these catches. So he's really a complete tight end. And I almost feel like he's underrated now because of some of these injuries. And I get it. Like, availability is the best availability, the best ability. But even on like these, you know, top 10, like Jeremy Fowler's rankings, I was surprised to see him. I think he was fourth or fifth. Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. But that also lets you know how the NFL thinks about him, how these executives that are putting together teams feel about him as a player, because it kind of shows how much respect they have for him. He is a do-it-all tight end. He, you know, there's not a lot of holes in his game. He does everything pretty well, pretty at a high level. And so getting him back, and, you know, we'll see if they even, I know they said full go, but I do wonder if they'll like not try to force him out there after this offseason of back injury and letting him heal. But If he's ready to go, it seems like he was chomping at the bit in OTAs. Like, we would see him out there for the early morning walkthroughs, and he'd be out there running around with the guys. It seems like he was ready to play, but maybe they're just kind of being cautious with him back then. I'm curious to see how much of that bleeds over to training camp, but if he's ready to go, like, they need him out there, man, because the offense, in some ways, I think probably in the run game the most, they kind of felt his absence when he wasn't there in the second half of the season, because I think he got hurt week 10. But from there on out, rushing offense wasn't quite as what we, you know, obviously offensive line plays into that, but just wasn't quite the same, in my opinion, when he went down. And having a multiple guy that like that at the tight end position is huge, and will probably alleviate some concerns seeing him out there running around when you're about to potentially give him a massive contract extension too. So it's another thing to keep in mind here.
To highlight your point, Colton, about Sam being underrated, you know, I think people started kind of sleeping on him when he had that slow start, was a hamstring injury maybe to start the 2024 season. Yeah. But he still had a really good year, and he made some improvements, I think, in some key metrics, mostly yards per reception, right? Like, he was getting down the field. He was doing more damage after the catch. And you look at the numbers through nine games last year where, you know, it wasn't 2023 where he set all these rookie records and they had to lean on him so heavily. He had 120 targets that rookie year. He was on pace for 93 last year. So he's on pace for nearly 30 fewer targets, yet on pace for more yards, his record-breaking franchise record rookie season. He was going to top 900 if he stayed healthy and stayed on his current pace. And so you saw big improvements in success rate, big improvements in catch percentage, like just the percentage of targets he was hauling in. Like, he was having a really good season. And you talk about complete tight end. Like, I think that was maybe the most impressive thing to for me about Laporta last year was the strides he made as a run blocker. Like, guy gets drafted, he weighs 240, 245, and you just never think he's going to offer much in that department. You're just hoping you get effort, right? And I thought fundamentally, like, he made really good strides. He held up so much better in blocks, so many fewer missed assignments, and it became kind of a weapon for him. And so, when he left, you could talk about the offense struggling, but the tight end position disappeared for the Lions.
It did.
From weeks 11 through 18, all of their tight ends, led by Anthony Firkser, combined for 117 yards. That was by far the fewest in the NFL. Like, they were a non-factor in the offense. And yeah, you could talk about more 11 personnel, more to slot, but like, you take away the tight ends from what this team likes to do, and it's just a fundamentally a different offense. And so I think they both desperately need this guy back. And I think they also did the smart thing by bringing in Conklin this offseason. And I understand Conklin has a lot to prove after a down season last year where he kind of got phased out. It didn't really fit with the Chargers. But, you know, it's a guy that was averaging 50-ish catches a game for four seasons with Minnesota and the Jets. And, you know, kind of stylistically similar to Laporta. I mean, obviously not as talented, but, you know, a really, really nice, quiet, under-the-radar addition that I think is going to help this offense, because without Laporta, you know, they were held under 20 points three times the final eight games. I think it was the only three times, if I remember correctly, last season where they were held under 20. And so they desperately need him back in an offense that's full of weapons and full of talent. Like, you take him out, And things are just worse. And the last point I'd like to make about Laporta is it's been interesting to watch some of these tight end contracts come down while we've been off. I believe Brenton Strange, did I get that name right? Brenton Strange for the Jaguars got paid $12 million a year. That one got the classic agent inflation through the national media to like $20 million a year. But I think Kyle Pitts got $17.5 million. And so, you know, I was kind of sitting in that opinion that Laporta was tier two in paydays. Tier two is now 18 million. And that's only a shade behind the Kittles and the McBrides at 19 million. And so this is just the way that things work. I think if he comes out there and he has a couple solid practices, padded practices, like I would not be surprised to see that extension be the next one to get done.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. He was a guy that I've been watching all offseason. Obviously, a lot of us were, but that pre-write's already done. So whenever it does happen, that's getting dropped quickly.
Good for you.
Him and Gibbs are done. I was kind of waiting a little bit on Branch, but I should probably do that one too, just in case. But yeah, man, I think we know that he's a core guy here. Like, the whole reason you set aside money is to keep guys like him, and he's everything they're about. So when your head coach is a tight end, you got so much, you know, resources invested in that position, I don't see why you wouldn't keep him around. Now the question, again, as you mentioned, is how much he gets. And, you know, based on how the league feels about him, he's probably going to get on the higher end of that spectrum. Not saying he's going to be the highest paid when guys like Trey McBride exist, but I think he should be up there, and he probably deserves it, man. Like, he's been everything that they drafted him to be. He's still improving, still getting better. You see the impact when he is not available. When he was from weeks 1 to 10, when Sam Porter was playing and healthy, Lions were, believe it or not, based on all the offensive line issues, like, they were still sixth in rushing yards per game. Probably not the best, like, pure metric, but sixth in rushing yards per game. From weeks 11 to 18, they fell to 25th at 101.8 per game. And that's off of 136.3 that they started at. So
where was that Giants game, Colton? Was the Giants game in the week 11 stat?
I think it was. Was that a week 11 game? When was that?
I don't know. That's what I was asking.
I feel like that was week 13.
Yeah, so they were worse, and they had the Giants game, which is
the Gibbs, like,
really, really alarming.
Yes. So that kind of shows how far of a cliff they kind of fell off of when he was out. And I don't know if that's all him. You have to look at the other factors there, obviously, but he's a big part of this rushing attack and the offense as a whole. He is kind of the glue guy for this group, and it doesn't look the same when he's out there. He's not out there, that's for sure.
Well, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about the sponsor of today's show and the sponsor of Lions Collective, and that is our friends over at Prize Picks. I have my picks to give out. Two of them relate to what we're talking about today. So let's dive into them. And by the way, I do want to mention that there is a promotion going on as well with Prize Picks. It's play $5. You get $150 if you win your first lineup. So don't forget that. Use the code HMA. Very simple. You have predictions. We all do as fans, as media. So go in there and pick more or less than from different lines that they have. I went with Jameson Williams and Sam Laporta. I'm going more on receiving touchdowns for Laporta, 4.5. And I'm going more on receiving touchdowns for Jameson, 5.5. So I think those are both low. And I think they're both going to come back. Obviously, Jameson's going to have a better year than he had last year, in my opinion. I think he takes another step. But Sam Laporta being back, I think he gets back to his usual production. So those are my picks. You can tell those new users. Play $5, get $50, $150. If you win, use the code HMA. We got more to get to, though. And I do want to mention, you mentioned Brian Branch and kind of the extension that could be coming in the near future. Or not near future, but the future towards the end of the season there. If it looks good, let's get in some of the injury just thoughts on all the guys coming back or potentially have lingering issues. The pup list, Kirby Joseph. People are freaking out about Kirby Joseph. I know it's July, late July. People are still freaking out about Kirby Joseph. They're going to continue to freak out about Kirby Joseph. And then Brian Branch coming back from the Achilles injury. So some of those guys that are kind of working back from injury or are dealing with lingering injuries, heading into training camp, how are you guys feeling about some of those players and just the Lions as a whole with that?
I think we need to talk about our first prize pick segment where you willed John Collins to Detroit.
I am a humble man, Justin. I try not to, brag, but I mean, if we want to be, you don't think John Collins saw that, the loyalty that I displayed here from the city of Detroit. So shout out John Collins. I was slamming the more on Prize Picks for John Collins. I mean, we're talking months ago. So
yeah, happy you were on it.
And I'm going to continue. I don't think we more on John Collins.
I don't think we need any Pistons seeing bet segments right now, if you know what I mean. But
no, not at all. Not at all.
I'll tell you who might be starting camp on PUP, and it might be me. Everything I did this summer, I got injured, like all of it. Like I had to go to the doctor the other day because of an injury, and I'm like, man, I keep trying to pretend I'm 25, and my body's like, no, you're 45. I have a screwed up shoulder, a screwed up elbow, and I blew out a quad. So we're doing great. We're gonna keep going. Kickball league's going great.
What's our kickball record? Because for those that don't know, we're in a kickball league together. I have not played in a game yet because I've been all over the country. Yeah.
Are we in a league together? I've not seen you.
Kind of. Know. I paid the due. So
technically. Yeah, I think we are 2-1-2, and that last loss was we won't talk about it. It was a disaster. Man. We were playing with confidence, and that's been destroyed. It's over. Look, look, we're all on Kirby Joseph watch. I mean, it's that's injury 1, 2, and 3. And I know last year was a good reminder that like injuries can pop up out of nowhere during the summer. I don't think any of us really anticipated Levi being out for the year. I'd heard some rumblings that he was on crutches when he was missing some of those early practices, but I didn't think season ending, to be honest. We didn't anticipate Josh Pascal not playing last year. And so, you know, it's always, you know, you wait with holding your breath for that first pup list to come out that nobody jacked something up during the summer and lifting weights and tore a pec or something. But it all boils down to Kirby Joseph, right? Like, I don't think it's the end of the world if he starts on the physically unable to perform list, but I would say it's mildly ominous, if nothing else. I mean, to leave this guy in bubble wrap all through the offseason, at some point you need to see him practice. You need to see the strain of change of direction on his leg. You need to see that multiple days in a row, how his body's responding, to know whether he can be a factor for you this year or ever again, really. And so, you know, that's what we're all watching. There's a couple other guys, you know, Ty Conklin missed some practices there late. I was told it was relatively minor, but, you know, sometimes those things linger through the summer. And then Ben Bartsch didn't practice at all in the early offseason of the program. He was coming off a foot injury from the year before, but, you know, still you'd like to see him out there and get that left guard competition fired up.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You got to start with Kirby. You know, you got to go back to Dan's comments when he was asked about like his expectations for Kirby for the year. He was pretty honest and like basically said, we're not going to know until we're in the thick of training camp, which at the time it's kind of like, all right, well, he's missed all of the offseason program, all offseason workouts, all those things. You know, I guess it makes sense to just continue to sit him until training camp, but if there's a setback, like we saw when he was trying to come back during the season where, you know, we'd see him on a Wednesday and we're like, okay, Kirby's working his way back. And then you kind of see him struggling out there. And then you wouldn't see him Thursday or Friday and then quickly ruled him out for that week. That happened on multiple occasions last year. It's like, if we're getting more of that, where we see him one day and then he's gone for a week or he tries to test it again, and then he's, you know, disappearing again. That's a problem. That means you can't rely on him. And so Dan said it, like, we're going to find out one way or another what he can do, but it's not worth it right now. That's what he said at the time. And now it's go time. It's training camp. He needs to be out there. And if he can't be out there, you got to kind of lean on some other guys. Chuck Clark is a guy that kind of impressed some of us. They got some other options at safety. Christian Izian has been getting some work in there, but this is a guy you paid to be here. This is your first team all pro. This is a game changer. He's a center fielder with range. Quarterbacks hesitate throwing in his direction. And that can be an entire side of the field, just based on his range and how much ground he covers. He is a weapon back there. And if you don't have him, your defense changes. So certainly worth keeping an eye on him, obviously. But I'm not even thinking about Brian Branch right now. I just don't think there's a world in which we need to. Maybe if he's just like crazy ahead of schedule, but it really sounds like we're probably not going to see him until October at the earliest. And Dan's not even putting like a timeline on that right now. So until something changes there, he's kind of out of sight, out of mind, I guess. But yeah, I mean, some of these veterans, like you mentioned, like Ben Bartsch and you know, other guys that might have been rested just because they don't need to push them in OTAs. Like, you're going to see them out there and, you know, they're quietly talking him up, it feels like. Obviously, I think in a perfect world, you want Christian Mahogany to win that left guard job. But they've certainly brought in competition. That's been a theme for them all offseason. Just kind of creating raising the stakes once these practices kind of get underway here. So, yeah, there are a few battles like that I'm looking at, guys that weren't around in OTAs in May and June. That will be out there for training camp, and I'm excited to get some eyes on them.
I think we talked pretty extensively about the depth at safety that they built, and I think it was a Chuck Clark praise hour the last time we got together, and I think at some level rightfully so. But they're in so much better position to absorb a prolonged absence with Kirby Joseph. But you hit it on the head with the lost playmaking. I mean, that is, you might get fundamentally sound football from the guys that you might plug and play in there. But here's a number that I pulled up when I did a quick safety preview earlier this week. Joseph, 55 career games, 20 interceptions. Obviously, most in the league at that stretch. Clark, Maddox, Izian, Harper combined 15 picks in 290 career games. Yep. Like, it's just you're going from what you feel comfortable saying 4 or 5 plus interceptions from Kirby Joseph, plus countless others where he's just going to be in the vicinity and be a pest versus maybe one from whoever is his replacement. And so, turnovers change the tide of games. And so his absence is going to be felt if he is in fact absent.
Let me ask this. Do you think they should have maybe prioritized safety a little bit more in the draft, knowing that a lot of people view this as a good safety draft? Brad himself didn't think it was as good as people thought. I think he said that on day three, but would you have maybe targeted safety a little bit higher if you knew that Kirby might not be himself in August?
I never know what to believe when Brad says those things. I mean, maybe he did. Maybe he believed that, or maybe he didn't like the price point for where they were going. It certainly felt good to us. It's tough because you always look at the draft and you go, okay, who did they take? What did they take? Well, they needed all those players too, right? Like it was going to be a moving target of what they didn't address. Third tight end we've talked about a bunch. All those guys went early. I would have liked to have seen, I guess, a young safety to kind of be groomed in there as that third option that could potentially be a starter. But if what you have is what you did with the veteran stopgaps, like I feel pretty good that gets you through. And I don't know. The Rams had a lot of success drafting safeties during Holmes' time there. And I almost wonder, like, if he's got this sense that, like, maybe a rookie can play safety a little faster than some other positions in this league. I think it's a very complicated position, right? And you are kind of a vocal leader back there. That's why we like Chuck Clark as kind of the front runner to replace Joseph if need be, and certainly Branch. But I think they could go out and find that guy next year if need be, and maybe felt that way. I don't know anything about the depth of that position specifically, but we know this is a deeper draft coming up overall. So that stands to reason the safety talent, which is already a devalued position in the draft, is going to get pushed down.
Yeah, no doubt. With this safety class, it was kind of like, I feel like a lot of the top safeties are more like in the Brian Branch mold than like a pure center fielder that can do things that Kirby was doing. Like maybe Bud Clark, but he went earlier than
Bud Clark.
Yeah, right. He
did like bottom of second, right?
I think so. Who do you end up with? Seahawks. Someone else. Yep. Yeah, Seattle. I mean, he's going to be an all pro there. Just knowing that. But like, yeah, it's like those center fielder guys. There were some available, but I feel like a lot of them had issues with run defense. And if you can't tackle in this defense, you're not going to be on the field. So you got to be able to do it all. So definitely some holes in those guys' games versus maybe some of the higher ones were like in the Brian Branch mold where like, you don't necessarily need that, especially if you plan to re-sign Brian. But yeah, I mean, if they can find one in the upcoming year, I think that would probably make sense. But for now, I think they did well to address the position with some depth and some capable guys. But obviously, they're not Kirby Joseph, so going to need him to be healthy.
For our final just 10 minutes of the show, 10-ish minutes, I do want to talk and give credit to our sponsor, another one of our sponsors, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Kyle, by the way. He crushed it, stopped over there. I know you were there, Colton, because I ran into you there, but the World Cup games he had freaking going on. And the bar was absolutely packed. So Kyle's doing a phenomenal job with Dog and Pony Show Brewing. If you haven't checked it out, I suggest you do. It's amazing, and it's awesome in there. And if you mention Lions Collective, by the way, you get your beer slightly cheaper, $1 off. So it's worth it, I promise you. So go check them out. But for our segment this week, Pick of the Week, I think it'd be nice if we gave our pick of what storyline we'd like to see. I know you kind of each talked about things you're looking to see, but just the one thing among many others that you're heading into training camp not focused on, but looking forward to finding out or learning more about. What is a storyline you guys are looking forward to?
Lead us off, Colton.
I'll go with, and I don't know how much of this is going to be answered in training camp, but I'll say the season if it bleeds into there. Ali McNeil, like if he's such an X factor for this defense, and I feel like he's not being talked about enough. The season he was putting together in 2024 was like a Pro Bowl caliber season. It really was. He was top 15 in win rate, top 15 in pressures. He was kind of putting it all together that year. Last year, obviously, still coming off the injury, didn't quite look like himself. But if he can prove capable to be the player that they paid, $96 million to, that really changes the defense. And he had his moments last year, but the consistency just wasn't there. So if he rediscovers that consistency, and he seems to be already talking it up, like you know, I was probably playing some of the mental games last year where like, oof, probably overthinking it on some things. If he's just playing football and his mind is at ease, this is like a top 10, top 15 defensive tackle in the NFL and a guy that you paid to be basically a borderline star player for you. That interior pass rush just wasn't there last year between him and Levi not being around and Tyleek still kind of learning the ropes here. Just wasn't quite where it needed to be. But I think a year removed from, you know, Tyleek having a year under his belt, Levi coming back, maybe you see what he can give you. And then obviously Aleem being further removed from the injury, that really changes the equation at defensive tackle. And I think that can change the equation of that heart of the defense right there. So he's a guy that I'm like, man, they really need him to be the player that they paid all that money to, especially this year.
I think Dog and Pony was the only place I didn't get hurt this offseason. So got that going for me. Look, I think my favorite part of training camp is like the pads come on, right? And so you start getting answers on really what this team looks like, particularly in the trenches, right? And I didn't recognize this until Jeremy Reisman pointed out, but none of the starting offensive linemen, projected or otherwise, will be playing beside a guy they played beside last year. Mm-hmm. Like that's crazy. And for a unit that is so dependent on chemistry, it's kind of all new. And I understand that you've got multiple returning parts, but just the way the deck has been shuffled, like it's all new. And so that's going to be really interesting is how cohesive that unit is, particularly with the addition of Cade Mays, you know, really the key cog there, the key offseason addition. And then defensively, the depth has me more intrigued, I guess, than the starters, right? Like, I know what Aiden Hutchins is. I have a really good feel for what DJ Wonnum is going to bring to the table. I do believe Aleem's going to bounce back, and I guess kind of intrigued by what year two jump looks like for Tyleek Williams, but I feel like there's these spots down there at the seventh, eighth, ninth spots with a boatload of young guys kind of competing for these jobs, the Gil Howards, the Tyree West, the Aiden Kianaina, Anthony Lucas, Makai Wingo, Hassanine, like who's going to grab the brass ring from this group? Who's going to stand out? And within that, I mean, he's not a young guy or not maybe necessarily in that sense, but I'm really intrigued by Peyton Turner, right? And in part because sometimes like a dude just steps out on the field and you're like, oh, I get it. Like, I understand why he was brought in. Like, he looks every bit the part. Like, he looks like Marcus Davenport out there, right? He's wearing number 92. He's big, broad shoulders.
You're going to get in trouble saying that.
Yeah, well, look, he was drafted to be Marcus Davenport's replacement in New Orleans. And for the same reasons that Davenport hasn't worked out with durability, that's been a problem with Turner the last few years. But it's different when the guy's on a vet min deal with no guarantees really attached, right? Like you're only looking for game plan dependent 10 to 20 snaps. And so if he can be a dude to round out that rotation of four with the addition of Wonnum and Moore and, you know, supplementing Hutchinson, like that could be a really, really sneaky pickup in like that Rock Ya-Sin vein that Brad hit on last year, or Meek Robertson a couple years ago, right? Like they do find these guys that they pay near or at veteran minimum that find a way to contribute. Like that's just part of the NFL. That's part of being successful as an organization. And like Turner's kind of a guy that like I'm very curious to see one, can he stay healthy? And then if he can, what can he contribute to this front?
That'll do it for today. Lions Collective.
Whoa, Jeff, what was yours?
I'm going to go with the secondary. But more specifically, I know we talked about Kirby Joseph. He's the storyline in the secondary for me. Kirby Joseph, please, you change games with your ability to get takeaways. So I need you to play football. If you don't, I'm going to be miserable about it. So please, Kirby Joseph, and in the number two corner spot. That's what I want to see too. So secondary as a whole, but Kirby and Rock Ya-Sin or whoever else takes that spot. That's the storyline for me. You guys can check out more of these two guys right here, their work, Detroit Football Network and The Athletic. Those guys will be grinding for the foreseeable future. Along with myself, you can check me out weekdays 11 to 1 on Woodward Sports. We'll check you out next Wednesday here on Lions Collective. We'll be back with our guy Will Birchfield. But until then, have a great day, everybody, and go Lions. Peace.